Okay, great. Yeah, so today's call is about working with buyers or sellers. Could be negotiating, conversations that you had, maybe how to handle a phone call or how to handle an approach, anything like that. So let's dive right in and go over what questions you have or some experiences that you've had from the last time we've chatted. Anyone can jump on first.
Hey Nathan, this is Forrest. How are you?
Good, Forrest. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you.
Awesome.
So, I just left an appointment for a motivated seller or somebody that answered my direct mail piece. And, I mean, I think I did, what I should have done, but I think he's more of a tire kicker than a, well, I mean, he's going to sell the house, but he's more or less collecting bids or offers at this point,
Okay.
Maybe I misjudged the level of urgency a little bit, but I mean, I really feel like I need to practice, FaceTime with people and, make good decisions and bad decisions. But anyway, so, this guy is selling a, $220,000 ARV house, and his mother passed away in December, and his brother kind of was living in there and trashed the house, and his mother had been in assisted living, so he's the executor of the estate. He got to kick his brother out once she passed and all this stuff. But the house is it needs $60,000 to $70,000 worth of updating. The house has never been updated since they built it in 1965, and so I give an offer on the spot. So what I did is, we came to an agreement on what the after repair value was, and then he had thought about fixing it himself. He's a industrial contractor, and he thought that maybe he could do it himself, and he had gotten prices. So I said, well, let me hear your prices. So, we wrote down all his prices on all the repairs and stuff that he had estimates for, and I filled in the blanks with stuff he didn't have estimates for, and I'll walk him through why we have to be at 70% of the value, basically. And, he agreed with everything. And then, when all was said and done, the offer price was $85,000. He goes, well, that's a lot lower than I thought it was going to be. I'm like, okay. These are your numbers, right? And he goes, yeah.
Right.
Okay. He said, well, I'm going to have to think about it. I said, okay. Okay. I asked him, what do you want to think about it? He goes, well, I want to get a few more people through here to look at it. I said, okay. I don't know
all
what
right.
I could have done different.
Well, yeah, I mean, first of all, great job with even going out there face-to-face, going out there, making the offer on the spot. Sometimes that can be intimidating for a lot of people. And I know you've done this, before, but, just doing that is, like you said, you're flexing those muscles about getting out there, live negotiation, and you did a great job with presenting what you know, what the rehab's going to be. You're very open and transparent. That's a very good approach. It's a good approach. Maybe just to add to that, tips that you could probably try is asking a question. Maybe you did ask him, but did you ask him how far are we from this number? Right. So if it's 85,000, let's say, how far are we from this number? How far away?
That's what I asked him. I said, what were you expecting? Because I don't know what I'm expecting. I don't know, what the price should be, because I always ask them I asked him. I said, what do you think, you should sell this house for? He goes, well, I don't have a number. He goes, you're the, person that's going to buy it, you give me a number. I said, so you're not sitting at home going, if I had, X amount of money, then I would sign a contract this morning, while you're getting ready, brushing your teeth, and, you don't have any number in your brain. And he goes, no, you tell me a number. I said, okay. I try to keep it as light as possible. But everybody's got a number, I mean,
right,
whether
of course,
it's $500,000 or $5 million or $50,000, everybody's got a number. a day would take, right?
Right, right, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and so even if the prospect, even if the seller is trying to, like, you know, hey, I want to get some more feedback. So, you know, one thing you always, how do we get them to come back to you, right? So I would kind of leave a few open-ended promises, okay? I would call it, like, open-ended promises. They're not solid, but things like, well, hey, listen, I know there's a lot of other people out there. I know you want to get other offers. But I also, maybe this is something we can talk about if, you know, we can talk about in the future. You hear other offers. Maybe there's a way we can work out numbers where we cover closing costs or, you know, you find a few different value adds that you can add to that conversation. It could be closing costs. It could be something else that you could add to the mix. And maybe you can say, hey, listen, you know, at the end of the day, what we want to do is provide a quick closing. You know, sometimes there's a lot of other people or competition out there. They say they want to close fast, but I came out to your property, and maybe there's a number that we can meet in the middle. So I would say maybe a few other things like that, but I think you did a good job all in all right there, seriously. And one thing,
you know, that,
don't – yeah.
Go ahead. Finish your statement.
I was going to say that I know you've heard this before. There's fortune in the follow-up. So give this guy, like, maybe, you know, one thing you can always leave off on is, like, well, listen, is it okay if I follow up with you in the next few days just to see, you know, see where you're at and if you had any other offers? So I would, like, maybe wait 3 days, give him a call back and say, hey, you know, did you have any other offers? And this way it just shows that you're committed to the deal than maybe someone else. Because, you know, when there's commitment to follow up, more than likely those people are going to win. They're going to get the deal. You know, it just – that's why they say there's fortune in the follow-up. It's just being consistent with it. So even if you ask them that and say, hey, is it all right if I follow up with you in the next few days and just to see if you had any offers, maybe we can relook at my numbers and your numbers and see what we can come up with that makes it a win-win situation. So, yeah, I would add that to the conversation so that you can follow up in a few days and not wait for his phone call. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am paying – VA to follow up on my leads. So,
okay.
At least be like, you know, because I'm horrible at following up, and if it's left to me, it's not going to get done.
Yeah.
So, I'm just, you know, it's one of the things that I've just forced myself to outsource because, you know, I'm not doing everything I'm supposed to be doing, so I'm just going to have to pay people to do it. You know, to have somebody follow up, to have her follow up and say, hey, you know, Forrest gave you an offer, you know, 2 weeks ago, you know, what do you, you know, what's your position or what do you think, you know, of the offer?
Mm-hmm.
And at least, you know, if they say, well, yeah, you know, I really need to talk to Forrest about this, then she can send me a task and, you know, say,
sure.
You know, he wants to talk some more, she wants to talk some more, so.
Yeah.
That's good. But, like, hot leads, I'll follow up myself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's good you have a system in place and you've identified what you're not good at. Like, you're saying, hey, I'm not good in follow-up, so what can I put in place to make sure that that gets done? So that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. So that was this morning. You can go to other people. If nobody else wants to talk, I got another funny one I'll tell you about.
Let's go to your funny one, and then we'll jump to the next question. Because I'm sure you've had a few other deals that you've been doing some direct mail. So let's go
ahead. Yeah, well, this one lady was a investor referral from a person that found his website. And so it was out of his area. So he said, Forrest, you do these deals. And I did an owner financing deal there not too long ago in that town. So I said, yeah, I'll take it. No problem. And he said, well, just throw me a, you know, bird dog fee and I'll do it. I said, all right, no problem. So hold on. I'm transferring out of my truck to my ear pods. Hold on 1 second.
Okay.
Let me do this.
Can you hear me?
Just a little bit.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay, perfect. All right, sorry about that, everybody. So anyway, so I go and look at this house. This lady lives in Chicago. This house is South Virginia, and she said my husband died, and she said I want you to meet this guy out there. and he will show you around. I'm in Chicago. I said, all right, cool, man. You know, I'm getting all these dead people houses, you know. So anyway, I get down there and I meet this guy, and we're like walking through the bathroom, and he goes, yeah, and this is where the guy died. I'm like, holy crap, you know, and there's like, and he died in the shower, you know, and so anyway, I'm like, okay, man, like the shampoo was still there, the shampoo was still there, the soap was still there, the slippers were still there. I'm like, when did this guy die, you know, in a nice way, and he was like, in October. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, it's a little weird that nobody's cleaned up around here, but. Anyway, so, I tell this lady, I said, you know, it's a cute little house, man. It's all brick house, and, you know, the guy who died, his mother and father built the house, and, you know, it's just, and the lady wants nothing to do with it. Her family's in Chicago, but it's a cheap house. It's like a $40,000 house for like a 3-bedroom, 1.5-bath, all brick house, you know, on a quarter acre. I mean, how often does that happen, you know? And so she said, I want 38. On the phone, she said, I want $38,000 for the house. Or $8,000 down in a rent to earn with not monthly payment or anything like that. I said, okay, I'll go take a look at it. So I got in to talking with her, and I sent her an offer, and I worked everything down. I just turned it into a lease option deal is what my exit strategy would be on it. And you know, the house obviously is always in worse shape than, you know, what they say it is. And so went out there, looked at the house, and needed, you know, to be, you know, rent ready, basically. We probably need about $10,000 worth of stuff. And she had this, like, antique stove, you know, not antique stove, but like a 1960s, 70s stove, you know, the 36-inch wide ones, not the 30-inch wide ones. Just total worthless stove, and the guy liked the Redskins, so he painted the kitchen the color of the Redskins and the refrigerator the color of the Redskins, and I had put in there that I wanted to you know, take the appliances, and I would just donate them and get the tax write off, and she was like, oh no, I'm taking the appliances with me. She goes, you got to change constant. Well, why are you taking the appliances? She goes, well, I'm keeping that antique stove. I'm like, okay, you can have it. No problem. You know, you can take that thing with you, man. Save us having to move it out. But anyway, so I got her down to $22,000from $38,000, and she accepted it. And then the day she's supposed to sign it, turned it back, she goes, I just found out there's a $17,000 lien on the house, and I'm not going to sell it now because that's all my profit. I said, well, wait a minute. I said, wait. So you're going to, you know, let a house sit, and, you know, you're not going to take $5,000 because somebody's going to take $17,000, you know? It's like the craziest rationale in the world, you know? And so she said, well, what do I do? I said, you need to talk to a lawyer. I said, I'm not giving you legal advice. I said, talk to a lawyer, find out what's going on, pull a title, and figure out exactly what's going on. And the guy had gotten sick and didn't pay his medical bill, and so apparently she thinks that they leaned the house. So she calls me back this week, and she goes, yeah, my friend can't find the lien anywhere, so, you know, maybe we can just do it. I said, you don't know for sure. She goes, yeah, but why don't we just do it, and then, you know, if the lien comes up, then we'll figure it out then. I said, well, I've got time and money invested at that point. I said, who's going to recoup that time and money? She goes, well, I don't know. I'm like, okay. So then she goes, well, how about this? She goes, you know, just in case the lien's there, how about you just rent to own it for $5,000 down and $300 a month? That way I can cash flow and I can make more money. I'm like, lady, you know, you're tricking.
She's negotiating with you and using real estate terms on you. She's like, we have cash flow on this thing.
sometimes I want to talk to people like, who have you been talking to? You know?
Who
are you getting advice from? So anyway, it's always fun. All right, that's my funny story. So we're up in the air on that one. I don't know what she's going to do.
All right,
that's
well,
my funny
one. Well, you know, just to bring up, yeah, no, thank you for sharing that, but just to, you know, to bring out some points of that, you know, which a lot of people sometimes just overlook. We have a list price of $38,000. You got her down to $22,000, you said, right?
$22,500,
yeah. So great, you know, just the fact of doing that whole negotiation. And then the other part of that is, you know, if there is a lien, you know, or if there isn't, she's really flexible, right, with her,
right.
You know, probably even with that cash price, probably can even be, you know, who knows? It seems like it might even be free and clear, you know?
It is a free and clear home, but, you know,
yeah.
it's free and clear, but there might be that lien on it. But I don't feel like doing title work, you know, on something, you know, that's her problem. That's not my problem. I mean, I don't need the house that bad. I mean, you know, I can invest my time and energy in something else, I guess, than having to go and do title work and spend my money to find out something she should know already anyway. And she seems to be the kind of person that, you know, if somebody offered her $22,501, then she would, you know, go and do that. I mean, if she was willing to sign a contract with me, she's not willing to sign a contract until she finds that out. You know, so she's trying to get me to pay and do that work where she should be doing it.
Yeah.
And,
you
know, we're a for-profit organization here.
Let me ask you this. What is the ARV on the property? You said it needs about 10 grand of work.
55 to 60.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great neighborhood. It's one of those places that it's like, you know, it's awesome. It's a block from an elementary school. It's, you know, it's just an awesome, you know, awesome little deal in a do nothing town.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, something, it still sounds like it's something worth pursuing here because one, the motivation, she's flexible in her terms and what she's looking to do. Might be able to, maybe if you have a good relationship with an attorney, they could do a soft title search for you, you know, or do a full title search and, you know, hold it off for the next closing, whatever, however you want to do. I'm just saying, like, could be a good opportunity there.
Right.
You know, I mean, you said it needs about 10 grand for them to be move-in
ready.
Still needs like 10
grand. Move-in
ready. Move-in ready.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it could be, interesting. Good stuff. Well, thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, no problem.
Okay, let's open it up to, by the way, who do we have on the call today? If you want to just jump on and say your name, where you're from, and also, why don't we start there also. Say your name and where you're from, like what state you're in.
Hey, this is Carly.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Oh, I was sorry. This is Carly. I'm calling from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Awesome.
Ralph Bach from Florida.
Okay, great.
Tim from Asheville.
Okay, Alex Flores from California.
Hey, Alex.
Hey.
Chad and
Renee
Jamie
from
Hunter.
Connecticut.
Chad and Jamie
Connecticut.
Hunter from Phoenix, Arizona.
Okay, great. Right, great. Okay. Sounds good. All right. So let's go to someone else. If you've gone through working with a property owner, working with maybe a buyer or a seller, either one. It's been a month, right? It's been a month, or if we want to go back to the second week of the month, it's been about 2 weeks since we have jumped on the line, right? So if you haven't talked to a buyer, whether you're wholesaling properties or owner financing, or if you haven't talked to a seller, especially a seller, if you haven't talked to a seller in 2 weeks, I would love to hear your reason why. I'd love to hear that. We got to talk about that because, you know, with me, I don't pull any punches. I'm going to be very direct with you. I'll be very straight with you. We have to be making offers. We have to be making offers. So you want to jump in? Love to go over if you've had a current situation or worked with a buyer or seller recently or within the past 2 weeks. Let's talk about that. If you haven't talked to a seller in 2 weeks, why not, right? So if you're ready to go next, just jump on in. Okay, so if you haven't talked to a seller in 2 weeks, why not? Yeah, go for it. You're all not shy, are you?
Hi, it's Renee from Connecticut. I didn't talk to a seller. Hi. I didn't talk to a seller for 2 weeks because I'm trying to arrange my financing and I'm dealing with my mother being in the hospital and having life-threatening surgery. So,
yes. Well, thank you for sharing that. sorry for hear about your mom. Thank you for sharing that, though.
Yeah.
You're arranging financing. Is that in regards to real estate, like raising
yeah.
private money or something? Or
private okay. money, yes. Yep.
Private money? Okay. How's that going for you?
I have three potentials. I've talked to a couple of them, and they're going to think about it, and then I'll be in touch with them again in another day or two.
Okay. Yeah, great. Yeah. Follow-up, very important. By the way, if you need any help with that, by the way, with, like, talking to them or doing – we can always do a three-way call. If you ever want
okay.
me to jump on the line, I can be your I like to call it imaginary business partner, but I at least want to feel like I am a physical person. But
yep.
if you want to use me as your business partner in the conversation, then
okay.
let's feel free to do that. That way we can jump on a call and you can even hear how I do it. You can just bring me into the call and say, hey, here's my business partner.
Okay.
He's done so many deals. He's done many more deals than I have, that kind of thing, or whatever you want to say in that regard. We're just
mm-hmm.
working on deals together. I'd love to get you on the phone. He can go over it in more detail. And you and I can talk before we get on the phone with them. And then you
okay.
can actually hear me do the call. And that's
okay.
always helpful. I did that
okay.
literally on Monday and Tuesday, yeah, with other clients. And they were like, wow, I never would have thought of asking that question. I never would have maybe said it that way or something like that. And it always brings
okay.
up some good aha moments. So, yeah.
Great.
But thank you for sharing.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah. Glad you got the private money going as well. It's awesome.
Yeah. Thanks.
Uh-huh. Great. Okay. Who else?
Hi, this is Tim in Asheville, North Carolina.
Hey, Tim.
To follow up on that, is it feasible to do the double finance close where somebody buys you out and you don't have to have any money at the closing?
Is it feasible as in does it make, like, financial sense, that kind of thing?
Well, to get started in her particular situation without any private lenders.
Okay.
Isn't there a way to sell off the loan for a substantial discount anyway, but at least get going? I've never done it before, but I've got the money for down payments. It's not something that I can't do, but I also need fast cash flow. So whether I have the money
okay.
to put down, it still doesn't give me that cash flow for 6 months of seasoning, you know.
Okay. All right. Well, let me touch a few things that you said. Well, first of all, her strategy might be a little different than what you're speaking of. For example, when you're doing, if you're raising private money, typically in an owner, if she's doing owner financing, you have to go in and purchase the property with all cash so you can be in first position of the mortgage. Okay. So if that's what she's doing, that's pretty much because she's not wholesaling the deal at this point. If she does come across a wholesale deal, to go back to what you're referring to, in a double close, I would recommend a double close on almost every transaction for a wholesale deal. And the reason why is because, one, for privacy of how much you make on the deal and deal structure. So that double close, I always recommend that. Now, if you know, if you have a really close relationship with your cash buyer and they have no problem at all of how much money you're going to make on the deal, like you're so close to them, they say something like, Tim, you can make $40,000 on this deal. I wouldn't mind as long as I make my X percent or X amount of money on the deal. Then great. If you have a really close relationship, then an assignment of contract is no big deal.
Right.
But that may be fewer than having the, like a big buyer's list. And you have like, let's say 50 people or 100 people on your cash buyer's list and you don't have a good close relationship, you're definitely going to want to double close. Okay.
Selling the end buyer and setting up financing for them and cashing out at closing, that is possible,
yeah,
though, with a high discount and not need money going in.
Let me ask you a question, because you mentioned the word down payment. When you mentioned that, were you referring to you with the down payment, or are you referring to your buyer? Like, how did you refer that?
I'm sorry. The money I would need to bring to closing what I meant. Yeah. So if I were going to bring money to closing and I could just simply get somebody to buy the loan out, or if I were to on an owner financing situation, or if I were going to pay all cash, which of course you'd need a private lender for, I could trade that out and find someone to buy the note and still not need any money coming to closing?
Let me address the last one you just said. So if you were buying a property all cash, right, if you're buying a property all cash, let's say your exit strategy is to do owner financing, right? Yes, you could have a private money lender come to the table with all the funding. And, yes, you can get cash at closing. Let me give you a hypothetical example. Let's just say the property is worth $100,000, okay? But you purchase the property for $30,000, okay? There's a $70,000 worth of equity spread in there, okay? Now, because you're getting the property purchased at $30,000, let's just say after closing costs and everything, you're at $33,000, taxes, all that. Any just to close the deal is $33,000. Now, you still have a good spread there. However, would you just go for a private money loan for $33,000? You could, but why? You could actually go and ask for more money. Right now, if we were to say, if we're at $33,000 of a purchase price, let's just pretend the house needed $5,000 in repair. Okay, you could get some rehab money if you wanted to touch it up a little bit. It doesn't mean you have to. But let's just say it was about $5,000. That brings us up to $38,000. Can you add $10,000 just to keep the numbers even right now? Let's add a $10,000 profit for you at closing. Let's call it an acquisition deal finder, whatever term you want to give it. But for putting the deal together, an acquisition fee, that's your $10,000. So basically you would be getting a $48,000 private money loan from your private money lender. That would cover the cost of the purchase, any closing fees, the little rehab that we talked about, like $5,000, and then plus your $10,000 profit. So yes, you can structure deals that way. You can structure deals that way with a private money lender. They can actually fund the purchase, closing, a little bit of rehab, plus your profit. Yeah, you can definitely structure it that way. Is that what you were referring to?
Well, I was thinking of a note buyer actually buying you out. I've done about 100 rehabs, but I've not done any wholesale much at all over the years. I'm trying to get the concept of taking the huge discount because there's no seasoning and having a note buyer take me out of my cash purchase at closing. But I know that,
I have a friend who does this. It's not too common, but it can be done. So I can understand where you're coming from. And let me just, repeat what you're saying to make sure we're on the same page.
Yeah,
you're saying you have a potential note. No, it's fine. No, just for anyone else as well. So you have a potential note buyer that's willing to be doing a deal with you, and then you do the entire transaction, and at closing, they are already buying the note from you. Is that correct?
That's what I'm trying to work out, yeah.
Sure. It's very possible. The way I phrase that deal, I have a buddy of mine doing that in Charlotte. The way I phrase that deal is you're making most of your money on the back end, right? You're making all your money from the note buyer by putting the entire deal together with their funds and then selling them back the note. It's almost like a service, right? You're basically doing the entire deal acquisition, turning around, creating the note, and putting it back in their name, making sure that they are in that position, in the first position, and getting your chunk of cash on the back end at closing. It's doable. It's not too common. I typically don't hear people doing it, but it's definitely doable. However, the most important part of that is your relationship with the private money lender, or the note buyer, excuse me, the note buyer in this case.
Yeah.
Do you have a good relationship with the note buyer or something? Or?
No, I mean, I literally have not, I've not gotten into this before. So you would really, you, if you're doing the owner financing and then selling the note, and you'd really need to do it in 6 or 12 months. You couldn't start right out with a note buyer that way.
Yeah. Well, if you, if you know the note buyer, you could structure deals that way, because maybe they just have a chunk of cash and just want to create that active income with interest every month. That's why I was asking that, because going back to what you said earlier, Tim, the note, most of the time it has to be seasoned. It could be 3 months. It could be 6 months. Could be a year. I know this.
One of you guys, your guys, to consider.
Right, before you can get a note buyer to consider. For example, I was talking to a note buyer for the past few months, and he, you know, and I just sold a note, and he said, Nathan, I, you know, I'll buy this from you at, 6 months. I called him at the 3 month mark. He said, Nathan, the numbers just don't work. 6 months. Well, the 6 month came around. Sold the note. He was ready for it. The numbers worked. The timing worked, and it was the 6 month mark. However, there, Tim, there are companies, there are most like institutions that will buy the note at closing with no seasoning. However, they do want a steep discount, and that might not always make financial sense. So,
okay, but that would be a way to get in to buying and selling and flipping without any money at all. Or in my case,
absolutely.
I just can't. I don't. It keeps me from using the system just because I know I've got a 6 month delay before I can get out of, you know, get cash
flow. Right.
And I'm used to not getting cash flow from doing rehabs.
Trying
to avoid, you know.
Right.
And then wholesales are just really hard these days, as you know, I guess.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. You're absolutely right, Tim. You know, one, with the rehabs, those are the big chunks of cash. Actually, Forrest, who was on the call earlier, he's a rehabber. You know, he's done rehabs, he's done wholesales, he's done owner financing. He's done a lot of stuff in his investment career. But his bread and butter is the rehab. And transitioning into that can be, or transitioning can be a little difficult, especially right now with wholesaling. You're right. The primary markets are very difficult. And the reason why, Tim, is because it's a seller's market, right? Everybody thinks their house is worth, you know, 100 times worth more than what it is. And people are buying these houses. Houses are getting overbid on, right? So everyone just is going with the wave, right? And that's how it is right now. Primarily, if you're going to do some go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, in Asheville, the paint and carpet guys are doing 85, 90 cents on the dollar. And the only thing the only thing you can really get are the things that scare other people to death. But, I mean, we've done it long enough. We can do a $50,000 rehab. I just don't want to take that long of a cycle, you know.
Right. Yeah, you're right on, Tim. No, yeah, you're right on, and it's kind of like a national thing. Anything in the primary markets, you have the paint and carpet guys, they're coming up higher towards, you know, towards asking just because of inventory, right? And when it comes, you really have to tap into more like the secondary market, right? So any non-metropolitan area, you kind of go on the outskirts of an area of a major city, you know, just kind of go into the outskirts. And that's actually where, yes, you can still kind of get some good wholesale deals in those areas, but also you can also get some good owner finance deals in those areas as well.
Okay. And well, in those, a lot of those people, they can't afford the middle of town anymore. They've got to go out, and they know that. So.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, what about, yeah, and I don't mean, this is out of your subject range, and that is fine if you don't want to deal with it, but what about going for the subject twos, the pre-foreclosure? I feel like a lot of people don't know how to do that, so is that a way to go instead, or is that just not, not a question for you?
You know, no, it's fine. The question is fine. excuse me. I mean, you could definitely take that approach. I would say the two types that are tend to be really popular when the market is at this peak level is one, lease options, like taking over, you know, creating a lease option with the seller, you know, doing a lease with the seller, and also subject to. And that's because of the way the market is. So I wouldn't say it's a bad option. You know, it's just a matter of if the seller is willing to, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. How so, desperate they are, which is the case with everything, I guess. So.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The biggest thing now, what's that?
At least you can pay close to retail for it, you know.
Right. Yeah, you can get closer to retail with those strategies. I think the only thing where people get a little, you know, wondering how long is the market going to be like that? Is it going to come back down? That's kind of like the risk factor. But if you have to take some action, right? You can't just sit there on the sidelines waiting for the market to correct itself.
Well, and I sold a subject to two subject twos in 08, and they fell off the face of the earth, and now they're back up again.
Yeah.
I'm still getting payments on those houses. So they work. It's just...
Yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah, well, it definitely works.
Didn't mean to divert your questioning or whatever, but just concerns about what's out there to be bought now and what's the easiest route to cash, you know.
So. Right. And, Tim, just to add to that, if you're looking for if you're looking for note buyers and want to know, like, different people maybe who would go all in, institutional and a few private, I have a note buyers list. That's actually one of the note that I just sold last week came from that same list. If you want that list, just email me, Nathan@LarryGoins.com, and I'll send you that note buyers list. It's fairly updated. I would say it was like mid 2017 was the last update, so it's got relevant numbers and in context on there. Yeah, and I just, like I said, I sold a note last Friday from that list. So.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
Sure. Yeah, no problem. All right. Okay, let's go to the next person has either a question working with a buyer or a seller, or if you want to share why did you not talk to a seller in the past 2 weeks, if that has happened to you. What has stopped you?
Nathan, this is Carly. I have a question. Sure. It's probably for most people, but I usually do seller financing. By the way, I have talked to a seller actually while I was on this call. I accepted a deal, so I got a house under contract.
Awesome. Congratulations. Great.
That's my second.
Awesome.
I'm doing good with that. Looking at a wholesaling project. I've only done one before, and it was here in town in Raleigh. This is going to be out of state. So my question is, on marketing it, until it's closed, how do I get the people that are the buyer interested to go see it when, or you know what I mean, because it's not mine yet.
Okay. Yeah. So first of all, let's start from the door. You got a lockbox on it already, or you have it under contract? You have a lockbox on it?
Yeah. We're not going to close till the 11th.
To the 11th. Wait, this is a wholesale deal that you're purchasing?
Right, it's a wholesale deal. So I was hoping to wholesale it, you know, and then be able to either do a double closing or sell the contract and have them go to closing.
the buyer.
Okay, right. Okay, so let's go this way. So you have it under contract, and you're the settlement date, the closing date is on April 11th, right?
Right.
Okay, so if you had a buyer in that market today, they said, hey, I'm ready to go check it out. You have a lockbox on the door. Does the realtor have – so is there a way they can access the property?
The realtor does.
Okay, great. Yeah. So and also it kind of helps, by the way, if your realtor is okay with someone going into the property without the realtor being there. Hopefully that's
right.
The case. Yeah, great. Yeah,
I don't
great.
Know.
Okay.
Because, like I said, it's out of state. So I've been working with them. This is
our
first deal.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So just for future reference, it helps because then you don't have to like coordinate appointments and all that. But, you know, if the realtor gives you the lockbox code, then you can send your people over there. Yeah.
Okay.
So your buyers. Yeah. So in this situation, the first thing you want to do is use classified ads. Cash buyers, they just love the classified ads. Even if you did ghost ads, like, you know, properties that you know, just have words and text, but it speaks to the language of buying property. That's called a ghost ad. So even if you had just the text and no pictures and stuff, it gets them to call you, and then you can send them the pictures via a link, by the way. I just as a reference, please put all your pictures or videos of the property into a, like, cloud drive or, you know, cloud type service, Google Drive, Dropbox, and send them the link. Try not to add any videos or pictures to an email. Okay.
Yeah. Cause
they're huge. Yeah, exactly. It's huge. It clogs up emails. And most of the time it doesn't get delivered. A lot of people don't realize this, but sometimes their mailbox won't accept large files. And then they're wondering if they ever got the email. So keep that in mind. So start with classified ads, and you would want to probably test a few ads, but I would start with the ones without pictures and get that, you know, get at least the numbers, the facts of the property into classified ads. You could start off with the mother of them all is Craigslist because they get the most traffic.
Sure.
But there's also you said the property is located where? What state?
In Alabama.
Alabama. So if you have it in Alabama, it could be BirminghamClassifieds.com, MontgomeryClassifieds.com. You'd want to probably hit up all the classified sites. That's, you know, usually a great place to start. With the property already under contract, because it's with an agent, it depends on the agent, but you would really want to try to market the property if you had it with a seller to put signs out right away. Right, you'd want to put your signs out right away. With an agent, that might be kind of an issue sometimes, depending on the agent.
Right.
So if you're working with an owner directly, you could definitely get out signs as quickly as possible on the property. And additionally, if you're close to a local RIA group, by the way, if it's like Birmingham, like Beeham RIA is really good. Any one of the local investment clubs, you could actually do marketing to those RIA groups if it's for a cash buyer as well. That's another way to get it out there.
Talk to them about a local attorney, and I didn't, like, with our RIA, if you're not a member, you can't market. So I didn't know if they were like that.
Right. Most of them are, and this is what I suggest to people who are investing virtually. For example, I'm a member of 3 RIAs in North Carolina, and I don't even visit them, right? So I'm a member of Jacksonville RIA. Yeah, I'm a member of Jacksonville RIA, the Fayetteville RIA, and what do you call it? Actually, there's two in Jacksonville. It's two in Jacksonville, but they have different names. So I'm a member of those RIAs just for the access to people and data. Contacts is what I'm paying for. I'm caring about the contact. I don't care about the seminar. I don't need another seminar. I don't need to attend your meeting. I don't need to hear about how to do more real estate. I need contacts. So
right.
I would recommend if you're going to be in Alabama investing in that state market consistently, then become a member of the RIA and be a virtual investor at that RIA. And what you would want, your goal, is to get those contacts. Another thing, too, when it comes to virtual and digital real estate, is there's a few good websites for this stuff. One, Connected Investors. Have you heard of them?
Yes, I actually got on that yesterday.
Great. Yeah. Connected Investors. Now, they have a really good geo-targeting tool. You can narrow it down to the location. That's great. You can post in there, find other contacts in there. That's great. And then Bigger Pockets. Bigger Pockets, again, has a very similar, you know, create your own profile, find investors in those local markets. Bigger Pockets is another great website as well. And then there is this is probably one of my last resorts, but sometimes you can find an online group, like a Facebook group. I'm not a big fan of LinkedIn. I would say probably go more with Facebook, in my opinion, but go with a Facebook group of investors in that area, not a national, like don't do national wholesalers or anything like that. Those don't usually get a lot of bites. But I would say if you can find a local group that is looking for deals and whatnot, I would definitely probably tap into that group, become a member, you know, of that Facebook group and, you know, meet other cash buyers in that area virtually, jump on the phone with them, and then you can post your property in there if other people are posting deals. So you could do that also.
Okay.
And if you have – oh, sorry. One last one is – and it's not activated in every market, by the way, actually. But you could check it online on Facebook. It's Facebook Marketplace.
Sure. Yeah.
And it might be active in a market. Yeah, so you can use Facebook Marketplace, which I believe is the future of I think that's going to be Craigslist in the near future. So that's going to be the next big classified place for sure.
Yeah, because the houses I have sold seller financing, I've done on Facebook and gotten huge responses.
Great. Yeah.
I guess so. Just
yeah.
Just to see, like, when they ask me if they can see it, like, it's okay, though. I just need to talk with the agent to see if I can get them to let them in.
Yeah, this is – well, it's not to see if you can let them. It's to get them in, right? And the only reason why I tell you that is because now you have control of the property, and now they need to do it and make it happen. This is where I was bringing up that point right from the beginning where I said, do you have a lockbox, or try to get the agent – to give you that lockbox code, because you don't want to wait for the agent to say, oh, I can't make it today. I can't make it. I can go in 3 days. You don't want that to happen. If your cash buyer wants to get in there today, then have that lockbox code. That should be mandatory. As soon as that property goes under contract, you should have that lockbox code. And the agent doesn't need to be there on every walkthrough.
Okay. Yeah, just because I said, you know, I've only met them over the phone. So I'll talk to them and see about getting that.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Because this one's nice. It doesn't need any work. It's all ready to go. So.
Nice. Yeah, those are my favorite.
Like, well,
those are my favorite.
Rent immediately.
Great.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. That was my big question.
Awesome. All right, yeah, and please keep me updated on that. Like, send me some emails. Let me know what's going on. If you want, you can even send me your post. I'd love to know the response rate you get from any classified ads or any issues that come up with the realtor. If you need me to jump on the phone and tell the realtor what's up, no problem. Just let me know.
Okay, I love it. Thank you.
Okay. All right, let's jump to the next person who has either a question, buyers and sellers, or if anything has been stopping you from working with a seller, or if you want to surprise us with a deal and tell us about any surprise deals that you got under contract, that's great also. Or you can definitely share of why or what's been stopping you this week for the past 2 weeks, for what's been stopping you from making offers, talking with sellers, what's been the challenge. Talk about that also.
Hey, Nathan, this is Chad Hunter. Can you hear me?
Yes. Hold on. Chad, so there's Chad and one other fellow. Who's the other guy?
This is Chad. My wife is Jeannie.
Okay. Chad and Jeannie. Go ahead. Go for it.
Yeah, you bet. No, we're new with you guys, but I just had a question. We got a couple properties in Ohio, and they're in kind of a not-so-nice neighborhood. You know, we've got bought pretty cheap, but you know, some of the houses in these areas, for example, are going, you know, the rent-ready houses going for $25,000 to $26,000. That's rent-ready. That's something not fixed up, anything nice at all whatsoever, you know, and mm-hmm. we've got about $15,000 in this one house. And so, you know, with rent prices, rent ready at $26,000, and some of the nicer ones mm-hmm. fixed up are going for $36,000. There's not much money play there. We bought these as tax liens. And okay. what do you guys recommend? I mean, I know you could put money into it, but you can't change the location. But rather than just taking a loss on the thing or just selling it for what we got, we'd like to just sell it for what we got into it, because we're in Arizona and this place is in Ohio, so it's harder to remodel something like that so far away and to manage
sure.
it. But
yeah,
do you guys recommend even just, you know, if, for example, it takes $10,000 to get that thing rent ready, you know, just to get your money back out of it? I mean, when you're in a bad neighborhood, I mean, what would you do with something like that?
What part of Ohio is it in, by the way?
Cleveland.
Okay. Cleveland has a very strong rental market. Very strong rental market. Rents are above average right now.
Uh-huh.
It's a good buy and hold area. So let me see here. So you're $15,000 into both properties or one?
Into one. The other one we have is like a fourplex, and we're only $15,000 in it also.
Okay. Are these properties rented out right now, or they need the rehab to be rented?
They need the rehabs to be rented. The one property is a duplex that needs about $10,000, is what our lady says.
Okay.
The fourplex needs about $25,000.
Okay. Let me ask you this. If you were to sell these properties, right, if you were to sell these properties the way they are now, you're just going to get your money back, right? That's pretty
right.
much what you'd do.
Well, then we'd like to,
okay.
yeah, at least. But also we'd like to make a little bit of money on them if we can. These are just one of the deals that, you know, you buy them tax liens, you just don't know what you get until you got it, you know. So.
Right. You don't know what you get, yeah. Do you know anything about the market and the rental demand in that area? Have you heard anything, or are you familiar, or, you know, heard
yeah,
any
I've
news?
Yeah, I've got a lady over there that's called the property doctor. She kind of does all the, you know, fix-in-ups and, you know, properties and kind of let you know what's going on with the stuff. So it's got, you know, one bedroom, one bath, you know, for about $500 to $600, sometimes $700 mm-hmm. A month per unit.
Right. Okay. What would you do with the money other than go to Fiji for a month? What would you do with the money?
Well, we'd go buy more properties.
So, okay.
Are you talking about the if we went and got our money back out of it? Or you talked about
if you rented it out.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you got your money back. Okay.
Right.
Based on the market research on what property doctor is telling you, and $700 for a one bedroom? One bedroom, one bath.
$600 for one bedroom, one bath, yeah, somewhere around that.
$600, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's a strong rental market. If you were to say, Nathan, we are going to wholesale real estate, and you don't need any of your own cash to do that,
uh-huh.
if you were going to get into owner financing and, you know, raise private money, or even if you wanted to get a partner to help you finish the rehab of these properties, but here's the thing. If the value of the property is, what is it, above, you said the value of each property is what? 50, you said it was over 50,000?
Well, there's actually another unit just like the duplex that we have a street away that after fixed up is sold last year for $77,000. And so, but that's really a nice rehab. So, you know, ours, you know, to get ours to that point would be about $30,000. So, you know, with one of the deals, though, you're still in a bad area. Is it worth going ahead? Mm-hmm. And because we really don't buy in bad areas like this. We usually don't buy something that we don't put our hands on and can't see, feel, or touch. But on that situation, you know, that you can't be there and you can't change a neighborhood, would you take the risk of sticking $30,000 into a bad neighborhood hoping to sell it for $60,000 or $70,000?
Yeah. So I'm not sure about the value is there, right? When you said those numbers, low 60s, even high 70s, the value is there. And because that whole market is going through that kind of growth right now. If you're seeing, if you're hearing and hearing about a lot of rehabs that are happening in those markets just to get apartments ready, that might be a consideration. If you don't want to sink the other money into the deal, bring in a partner.
Right.
You know, if you bring in a partner, maybe someone in that area who would want to, you know, partner up and split the deal. I guess what I would really think about here is, one, you sound like, when you say bad area, I'm not sure what that would entail, off just off our conversation without knowing the address and looking into it.
Right.
But if you got two assets at a deep discount and you have the potential of in a great rental market, you know, it could create monthly cash flow for maybe right. you and a partner or however you want to structure that deal. It all depends on, guess what, your exit strategy is, you know?
Right.
If you're going to make – if you're only getting your money back for what you bought it for, I mean, you basically just – ran through two deals and paid closing costs and you're getting your money back. So
right.
what's your return on that? Right. So,
right. Yeah.
But you're in a Cleveland. Yeah. So Cleveland is a good market. So let me ask you this. What were you going to do next? You said you were over in Phoenix. What would be, whether you sold these deals or not, what is your next course of action? Like, what are you going to get into?
Oh, well, we're just wanting to focus with it. Cause we buy some HUD homes also, as far as the fix and flips and stuff. So, Our goal is to be able to do this thing remotely. We go between Arizona and Montana, and so we don't want to be bogged down in one spot. We want to be able to do it with the automated system Larry has going on. And so
sure.
Anything basically east of the Denver, you know, Colorado area,
okay.
of course, he says, is where he focuses on. So we'll just do whatever, wherever we have to go to grow it, but we just kind of don't have to deal with the
okay.
properties over there or property management company when we can't be there. In kind of a bad
mm-hmm,
area.
Mm-hmm. Right. So your next type of property, though, would you be doing like virtual wholesaling or would you do more of the owner financing?
More owner financing.
Okay. For your, without considering these two properties, would you use other cash that you have? Would you raise the money for it?
No, we got some other cash of ours. And also we got a little money from a private lender also.
Okay, great. Yeah. Great. Okay, so you definitely have options. I think first, if you want, send me, you can email me, Nathan@LarryGoins.com, and I could look into those properties, the ones you have in Cleveland, a little bit more with you, you
okay.
know, and that may be an option where you don't have to like physically be there. You could have a local partner who be the property management company and put some money into it. So now you're both 50-50 on the deal
right.
And generate cash flow that way. And the only reason why I say that is because Cleveland is going to continue to grow and increase. Send me some
right.
more information about the properties, and then we can go over that together. That's not a problem.
That sounds great, Nathan. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah. And then moving forward, you know, with the transactions that you want to do, if you have those options, whether it's your own capital or you want to use someone else's funds, you're definitely going to want to pick a market in, like you said, like east. And then you probably want to stay towards the southern states because the owner finance are natural in language or culture in people's minds, okay, in the southern states than it does so much in the northern states. Sometimes in the northern states, when they hear owner financing, it's usually done on commercial buildings most of the time.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Because the south is like, I remember even when I first got started in investing, even a lot of southern states, they have like, you know how there's those realtor books and it shows all the retail houses, right? Those little realtor books. They even have magazines like that just for owner financing in the South. But you would never find that in the North because it's just not common.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's more common in the southern states. So if you're considering doing owner financing, you might want to consider, you know, I call it below the belt there, right? The Virginia, if you draw a line
okay.
across the states there, anything below the belt. You probably could find some good owner finance transactions down there.
Okay, good information then. Okay, thanks a bunch.
Yeah, no problem. All right. All right, so we'll take one more. I think there was someone else that was jumping on. Either way, we'll take one more.
Nathan, Ralph Block from Florida.
Yes,
Ralph. The reason why I haven't talked to a seller in the last week is the inventory is tight as you mentioned, and the properties mm-hmm. that do have value, you know, they're in a price tag that's above my current QRP LLC funding. And as you know,
mm-hmm.
We're going to be making a presentation. I want to lock up the private funding first, so I know what's behind me when I get into making offers. I don't want to make an offer and then scramble to try mm-hmm. to get some money. That's my game.
Yeah. Right. Right. Absolutely.
And you know what we're pursuing? I got to go up there in Detroit in April April 11th. I'd like to be prepared for that, number one, as we talked yesterday. And number two, you know, I'm looking at that Airbnb that Larry's promoting right now with Brian Page.
Okay. Yep. Yep.
But my private money is my biggest hurdle right now. I want to have enough private money where I can go out and make some offers and get some real estate that makes sense. I don't want to get stuck with low, cheap properties that have a lot of problems and issues because of the market, you know, where they're at. That's you know, what's available today is low cost, but they're in areas that you don't want to participate in, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah. Right, right, yeah. Like D areas or C-minus areas. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you want it in upcoming progressive areas. Maybe there's a little bit of job growth in those markets, secondary markets. Those are usually great markets for that. But yeah, so absolutely. The other thing, by the way, Ralph, if you don't mind, I won't share any details, but I'd like to kind of share a little bit about your recent situation. Is that okay? Your good news?
Yeah, go ahead. It's a good positive thing that came as a surprise to me, number one, but it's with a personal friend. But go ahead. No problem.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my whole point of the reason why I wanted to share it with everyone on the call today is because we never know or we to know. I wish we could. I wish we had a magic ball and we could predict where our next funding is going to come from or where our next deal is going to come from. But unfortunately, in investments and securities, we never really know what the market's going to do, right? Everybody's wondering if Bitcoin is going to go up and down or in the toilet. And people are wondering if, you know, the stock market's going to dip another 720 points in one day. No one really knows. And it's kind of the same thing when we're investing in real estate. There is more security because we have insurance on properties and all that good stuff. But when it comes to what can happen and where a deal is going to come from, sometimes we just don't really know. We could be very much surprised. And that's the point of what I want to share with you with his investor here is he has a friend who came into, he sold a company, I think he made around, he sold a company for like $30 million. And now he set aside about $3 million just for investing. Now it's interesting because, and this is the most powerful part about this story that he's sharing, that happened to him, is this is a personal friend that he helped years earlier. So what do I mean by that? This is what's called the law of reciprocity, right? When you give, you shall receive. So he added some value to his friend's life years ago. Right. And all of a sudden, now that he comes into – what's that? Say it again.
No, I was just talking to somebody else. I apologize. Yeah, I'm the one who got him started. I helped him get started with that business.
Right. You helped him get started. You added value to his life and his business. The guy makes a bunch of money selling his business, sets aside $3 million, and now he calls him up and like, hey, best friend, I got $3 million. What are we going to do with it? What can we do with it, right? So, and I say this over and over and over again. This business is all about relationships, okay? There are so many different strategies that you can learn about, and it's just endless. Real estate information can be endless. But what's most important above all of that is relationships. The number one thing you need. If you do not have a real estate attorney on your power team, get one. If you don't have a title company or one or two title companies on your power team, get one. If you don't have a good investor-friendly real estate agent on your team, investor-friendly being that they know what you're doing, you're making wholesale offers, you're making discounted offers, they're not investor-friendly, get one. The most important thing you need in your business is relationships, not another seminar. And I'm not trying to, you know, knock anybody out here, you know, about going to seminars, but if you're on this call, I'll put it to you straight, because you have invested probably more than enough information, more than enough money on your education. And if you're in like a mastermind or a group like Inner Circle, it's the time for implementation. And everything revolves around implementation is your daily action and what you're doing in your business. And two, the relationships you have in the business. Really, those two things just have to be solid in your business. Knowing if you're investing in a market, even if it's virtually, you want it to be able to pick up the phone and contact someone that you know in that market. I said it earlier on the phone when I said if you're investing virtually, become a member of the local RIA group, right? Become a member of the local RIA, know who the players are, know who's doing deals, maybe people who are just getting started, right? Or a good real estate attorney in that area, a good title company in that area if you're going to be closing deals on a regular basis. So keep that in mind. Relationships are everything in this business. The closer relationships you have with your power team, the better it's going to be. I can't tell you how many times I have just friends in the industry that I've known for years that have no problem picking up the phone and saying, hey, Nate, I think I have a deal for you, right? And vice versa. Good friend of mine literally called me just, what was it, Friday maybe, Friday or Saturday. Hey, Nate, do you know I got this deal that needs funding? This is the criteria. We would have never just been able to jump on the phone and in 10 minutes go over all that information if we didn't have 8 years of trust, right? 8 years of relationship and trust. And that's how sometimes the best deals are done, is not through finding it on the MLS, okay? It's finding it through other people who come across a great deal. But you can't really find or get more deals like that if your relationships in the business are really skinny. If you have a skinny list of people, or if you are not touching base with them on a regular basis, you really want to expand your contacts. Contacts are really important in this business. So wanted to share that with you because you never know when maybe your best friend or a friend that you've helped, or I had another client that I was working with, her gardener, the woman who comes and does gardening on her house, actually said she had the money to fund the property, just out of conversation. So you never know where the funds are going to come from. But always keep in mind that as you build your real estate business, you are an investor. I don't care what you do full-time, even if you are a full-time investor, but I don't care if you're not a full-time investor, don't worry about that, right? Just when you're talking to people in your business, you talk to them like, hey, I'm a real estate investor. This is what I do. I'm a real estate investor. This is my business, right? And you don't have to tell people like, oh, yeah, you're full-time, whatever you do during your day job. If you're talking about your business, you declare your business, say what you do, say what you are, and go forward in that with confidence. That way people can know about your opportunity and what you're offering and what you're promoting. That's really important. That's going to be essential. So don't hold back on letting people know what you do as a real estate investor. So keep that in mind, whether you're part-time or full-time. All right? Okay. So thanks so much, actually, for everyone who participated on the call. Even if you just listened, that's great, too. Thanks for showing up. That's awesome. Be sure to go out there and be making offers. We're going to be back on the line in about 2 weeks, right? We got the second and fourth Monday of every month at 12 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. And in the meantime, hope you enjoy your holiday, whatever it is you're going to be doing. I'll probably be out in the I go out to the village, if you're ever wondering. On holidays, I go out to my wife's family, and we go out to the village. And I'll give you just a quick story, and we'll end the call. But actually, it was this time last year. You might find this interesting. It was this time last year, Easter, I went out to about an hour and a half away from the main capital in Uganda, and we were visiting my wife's family. And I remember I was in the I needed to get some documents signed for a deal that literally I did not find myself. I didn't even fund the deal. But I remember when I looked at the documents and the HUD statement, I was making about $34,000. It was like $34,127 or something like that. It was like, I remember 34-1. $34,000 when I looked at the HUD and everything. And I remember sitting in this small little internet cafe. Now, if you've never traveled internationally, internet cafes are little, rooms with a bunch of computers, and you pay by the minute to use the internet because that's all I had at the moment. And I remember sitting there, and I remember paying 500 shillings to use the internet for 30 minutes just to get these documents signed and scanned over. And I said, this is exactly what I wanted my life to be like 12 years ago when I was sitting in a seminar and not knowing a thing about real estate. And I just had a goal and a dream of traveling the world, being able to do what I want, when I want, with who I want. And when I sat there and I looked at that HUD statement and I was signing the docs, I said, this is exactly of what being in control and being making decisions and being in demand. This is what I want. This is exactly what I want. Even for me, for you, it may be whatever, the Fiji Islands or whatever. For me, it's giving back to children and education in Uganda. So whatever it is for you, some people want to get a bigger house, more cars, donate to their, you know, charity organizations, travel the world, whatever it is for you. But for me at that moment, I realized that I never gave up. So back 12 years ago, even when I wanted to, and I didn't get a deal closed for 2 years, it took me 2 years of just swimming in my own mind to get a deal closed. It took me 2 years to overcome the fear of just making the offer and going crazy, full stream ahead to make offers like all the time and be consistent with that. And that's when I had my breakthrough. And I know sometimes that can be the biggest hurdle for a lot of people when they're getting started or if they're going into bigger transactions. Anyway, I remember sitting in that internet cafe, signing those documents and saying, yes, if it wasn't for real estate, I probably wouldn't be here right now. And I probably wouldn't have been able to make $34,000 at a closing while I'm signing docs in a remote village in Uganda, right? It just came to me in a whole other way. And at that moment, you know, whether you're religious or not, but at that moment it was Easter for me. And I said, you know what, God, thank you so much for, you know, helping me not to give up on my goals and dreams. And anyway, I share that and extend the same thing for you. I congratulate you for sticking it out and never giving up. No matter how long you've been in this business, just never give up. You're in my opinion, and I think you agree with me because we're on the call, you're in the best business and the best investment strategy that the world has ever known, right? And that's real estate. So anyway, just wanted to share that story with you as you reflect and you operate in your business. The only one that's separating you from your goals and dreams and how you envision your real estate business and how you envision your future life is you. You're the only person that can stop yourself. So anyway, wanted to share that with you, and I wanted to wish you a good holiday this weekend. And whatever you do, whether you're out there celebrating with the Easter Bunny or whatever you're doing, but enjoy yourself, and wishing you all the best of luck, and I'll see you real soon. If you have any questions, you can shoot me over an email, Nathan@LarryGoins.com. And I'll talk to you real soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nathan.
Thank you.
Sure, take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.